Welcome to Parents Perspective. I saw it on TV, exclaimed six-year-old Sam. They rounded up all the bad guys and then just shot them. Well, then they burned down their building and everyone in it got fried, Sam's friend Kenji reported excitedly. I saw it happen 3 times. Do you think, whispered their classmate Karen, that those guys could come and burn down our houses? From a parent's perspective, how should we oversee our children's exposure to stressful news events? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We have 2 experts with us to help sort out how we can help our children deal with what's in the news. Sandra Calvert, a professor of psychology at Georgetown University, has been involved in numerous organizations on behalf of children and the media. Her recent book, Children's Journeys Through the Information Age, deals with research about children's social and cognitive development in relation to information technologies. She has 2 nieces and a nephew. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Calvert.
Thank you for having me.
Rosalie Kogan has been a social worker for the last 11 years. She is currently working with teens and adults through the Jewish Social Service Agency in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area. Rosalie has a grown daughter and 2 grown sons and recently became a grandmother. We're glad you could join us today, Mrs. Kogan.
Thank you so much for having me.
As parents, we've all been dealing with bombardment of stressful news in the newspapers and magazines, as well as on television and the radio lately. What effects of all this do you see on kids? Do you want to start with that, Dr. Calvert?
Certainly. One of the things that we have a lack of at this point is research on the topic. Obviously, with the events of September 11th, a lot of research was generated. So we should be seeing actually what happened to kids as a result of that. At this point, though, there is some anecdotal information about it. One thing is you would have to look at the age of the child. You know, how old is someone? A very young child, for instance, I've heard discussions of little children who kept seeing the World Trade Center falling, thinking that the event happened repeatedly. So the instant replay sort of idea, or the fact that the news media broadcast that event over and over, confused some children and, of course, created more anxiety because they thought it kept happening. Older children, by contrast, look to their parents. Of course, all children are doing this, but there's trepidation, there's lost sleep at night or fears of sleeping, there's anger. So there's this incredible mixture of sadness and anger that children have felt.
And so parents need to know how to talk that out.
Right. Children tend to feel much the same feelings that we feel, but the younger children have much more trouble articulating what it is that they're feeling. And they really look to us as models for their behavior. And in the aftermath of September 11th, we were all feeling so anxious, so stressed, so sad, scared. You know, so many feelings were percolating in this country. And I think that, you know, kids pick up on that. Even very small children who are pre-verbal will pick up on the fact that their parents are very anxious and upset.
If you look even at infants, you see a phenomenon called social referencing. So they look at their mother's face to decide how it is they should feel about an event. So you can't disguise when life is on the rocks and when people are stressed out and worried. Children are going to be looking to their parents for cues about what's happening in life.
That's interesting because I think we've all seen the phenomenon of the toddler who falls down. And before he utters a sound, he looks to the nearest adult. Then he utters the sound.
Exactly. And if you just smile and say, fall down, then, you know, they'll get up.
He gets back up.
Right. But if you look worried, or of course, if they really have legitimately hurt themselves, you know, then the response is quite different.
What's the biggest trap, Mrs. Kogan, that parents fall into about their kids' exposure to news?
I think overexposure is probably, at least from my perspective, one of the biggest concerns. It's very hard to turn the news off when something so momentous and terrible is happening in our country. But I think at some point you need to turn off the TV. and maybe turn on the radio if you really feel that you have to keep up with what's going on, because the bombardment of visual images becomes just so disturbing, but also, I think, numbing. And I think at some point we get overexposed, and I just don't think it's good to have it going all the time. I think that there needs to be limits that we place on how much we ourselves watch, even.
Do you see a lot of misbehavior acting out when children are worrying about how their parents are worrying?
Typically, I think you have to look at the individual child, but also there would be gender differences. In general, you would see boys doing more acting out behaviors, being more aggressive, being more rowdy, being angry, whereas girls might be more afraid, more withdrawn, more clingy. So I think that you have to look at your own children and what's their normal behavior and how are they acting at this point. But in the other areas of literature like divorce, you begin to see those sorts of things fall out, and I would assume you'd expect to see the same sorts of behaviors here.
Right. I think it's really important to be aware that kids might have sleep disturbances, and that's not uncommon. Night terrors, nightmares, they may want to come into your bed or to have you stay with them until they fall asleep. Sometimes a transitional object like a teddy bear or a favorite toy can be very comforting. A child who has not used a nightlight before might think that they really need one, and it would certainly be okay to let them have that or to keep a light on in the hall if that's what's going to be helpful for them during a difficult time like this.
The other thing we have to remember is that kids who are fairly young are not going to be as direct. They won't say, oh, I saw the buildings fall down and that made me scared. They may do something totally different that
right.
We would have to say to ourselves, wait a minute, I bet there's some connection here, even mm-hmm. though it won't be spoken.
Mrs. Cogan, how do you feel about having no television allowed when news is on, especially upsetting news?
I think that that's a bit unrealistic, but I know in a lot of families, older children have TVs in their own rooms, and I am really not a fan of that. I think that, for one thing, you can't keep tabs on what your children are watching if they have their own TV set, and the other thing is that tends to isolate families if everybody goes off into their own little corner of the house and closes the door and watches their own set. I'm a big believer in having the TV in a common area like the living room or a family room where everybody kind of watches together. And this way parents can monitor more closely what the child is seeing, can comment on it, can just kind of be around to be a sounding board when these very upsetting things are taking place.
There are families that have removed televisions from their homes.
But there aren't many of them. If you look at the statistics, there are like 99% of homes have televisions.
Right.
Most homes have multiple TVs. There are more television sets in this country than indoor plumbing. So,
oh my goodness.
Yes.
How
so
horrifying.
So your point about it being somewhat unrealistic to block the news, I think we have to remember that the news is a money-making venture. It's not just there to inform, it's there to make a profit. So sensationalism can also become part of a story. I'm not trying to suggest that the news agencies were exploiting tragic events, but at the same time, you know, they have a lot of incentive to keep a story alive, even when there's not much information at a given point.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of kids and the news.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Sandra Calvert and Mrs. Rosalie Cogan about kids and the news media.
If you do have the TV in a common area of the home, you can say, I think it's time to turn it off. Or you can switch to another channel or put in a video or play some board games. There are all kinds of diversionary tactics that you can use. But I think having the TV on all the time is not a good idea under any circumstances. And I think at mealtimes especially, it ought to be turned off so that there can be time for family conversation.
During the news, it's also an opportunity to educate children about what's happening in the world. Many times, people don't talk about the events that are occurring. They assume that children understand them, and they don't. So that an enlightened public would take that opportunity to really discuss events, talk about them. News comes and goes quickly. Television content comes and goes quickly, including the news, with little opportunity to replace something right then if you don't get it. So parents should be responsive to that and actually encourage civic responsibility.
Do you feel there's a certain age range then that would be appropriate to discuss the news with? I assume toddlers are not exactly in that category.
I would leave the toddlers out, but I would begin to discuss with children information as soon as they start asking questions. So if you listen to questions, it's a clear window into what children think is important, into what matters, about where comprehension breaks down, and that's what you build on. You listen to your children and you take it from there. I think that the middle childhood age range, you know, by the time they're about 8, 10 years old, is a very good one to begin to pull them into civic responsibilities, discuss the news, talk about the importance of a democracy and of citizens participating. And by adolescence, we want to socialize our children so that they become involved in this country and they go out and vote.
When you consider the low percentage of voters in this country, it's really appalling. And I think that that's a very important piece of what you're talking about. But children learn by what their parents do. And so if you don't vote, then your children are much less likely to be involved.
And if you don't discuss the news,
right,
they're just going to accept what they see and not
exactly
discuss.
And you have to make it clear to them that not everything in the news is 100% accurate. They aim to be fair. They aim to be accurate. But it is not always the absolute truth. And you can get your news from many sources, from the newspaper, from the radio, from weekly magazines.
Your child just might hear information from other kids. That's another way we get news, from our peers. And so you still might get hit with some challenging questions, as, for example, during the time of the Clinton impeachment proceedings and all that news that went swirling around the Clintons. How do you respond to bad language or material inappropriate for children when your children come home with it from other people's homes?
That's a tough one. It really is, because unless your kids are raised in a little bubble, they are going to hear things that you would rather they not hear. And I think you have to respond to their questions probably as briefly but age appropriately as possible. You have to make your own values known when you talk about things such as Clinton's escapades.
Indiscretions.
Yes.
We have to be honest with our kids, but
right,
not give them any more information than they need.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to overload them with things that they, you know, really don't need to know. You have to look at your child and see the kinds of questions that they're asking.
Are there kinds of peer interactions that parents should be concerned about as a result of stressful news, especially, for example, about violence?
I think that aggression for boys, I mean, aggression is imitatable. I mean, if you look at the boy who flew the plane into the building in Florida, that one of the things that happens, and it's inadvertent, but it clearly happens, is that we are modeling behaviors, and as children see them, they understand that they can copy them. So you need to pay attention to what it is that's on the news, especially the visual events that someone could copy. And also, I'd be very responsive to how my child feels. If they're angry, if they feel vengeance, if they want to get even with the people who did this, that's a big warning sign. And on the other end of the spectrum, you could probably comment more than I on this, you know, the withdrawn nature of, you know, pulling in and being really frightened by events.
I think also we don't want, especially older children, to feel that life is hopeless in the face of a tragedy like this, or that there's, you know, no future. And so it's really important to watch their behaviors. And if you see warning signs or behaviors that are very out of character for your child, you might want to talk to the school guidance counselor or a clergyman that you have a relationship with, or go to see a psychologist or a social worker, or even your pediatrician could be very helpful in making a recommendation for counseling if you feel that that's indicated.
The other thing I was thinking about with older kids, and you both were talking about the significance of getting lots of different media sources for their information. When kids are a certain age, I would think it's a good idea to have them start reading the newspaper.
Reading the newspaper is a fine idea because it gives them another perspective. And reading the different columnists especially will make them realize that people tend to see events very differently depending on their political, religious, cultural backgrounds. And I think that that promotes a very good sense of tolerance for other people's views, which in a democracy is extremely important.
If you look at where adolescents are currently going for information, though, they're going to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a major source of information for them. They dominate it. They take it for granted, just like prior generations did television. So I really believe that it's time we took a concerted look about how to direct them to constructive parts of the internet. There's so much content out there. So having an educated public is going to mean that we have to find ways to direct our children to information online.
And away from what we don't want them to see?
By the time they're adolescents, I'm not so certain that that's possible. But just like television should be in a public place, I would keep the computer in a public place and not off in somebody's room where they can explore without supervision. And that's the responsibility of the parent, to be aware of where their children are going. And one of the difficulties is that parents don't know as much as their adolescents mm-hmm. do many times.
Right, that's absolutely true.
Should we be modeling going to the internet to sites that we consider reputable to get information on something that's happening in the news so that they'll see this is something that people do?
Mm-hmm. I think that that's one thing that people do. They tend to go to the computer alone as opposed to doing it as a group activity. And I'd start them younger so that you can socialize them into the kinds of ways that you want them to use the internet that you think is constructive.
I would think also that for all the things that we're saying negatively about the internet, that it is a print medium, so that you do have to read. It's not images, for the most part, going before your eyes. It's a lot of information that's out there in printed form. Would that help to sort of slow people down and make them think a little bit?
That's an interesting question. You're suggesting that a moving visual image has more emotional clout, and I would mm-hmm. tend to agree with that. But when you're talking about does it slow them down and make them more reflective because it's a print medium, it's rapidly becoming a medium like television. We're moving into convergence. So those sorts of moving images will soon be available on the internet.
What differences are there between the impact on kids who hear about personal violence like assault or even murder and the more broad-based violence like war or terrorist attacks?
If it happens in your own life, it has much more impact.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like the old business about if your neighbor loses his job, it's a recession. If you lose your job, it's a depression.
That's exactly right.
Right. Very good analogy.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of kids and the news.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Sandra Calvert and Mrs. Rosalie Kogan about kids and the news media.
What else would you like parents to know about children and stressful news that we might not have covered?
One thing I think that people need to realize is that we faced a major historical event and turning point in this culture that reframes how everything is done. And all of us want to protect our children. We want to protect our loved ones and our country from future attacks. But one reality is that our way of life is different now, and that we have to adjust to that and inform our children. We don't want to scare them, but at the same time, we want them to understand the realities of what's out there so that they're not naive and caught off guard. They look to us as people who control the world, especially as they're younger, and they expect to be protected by us. And so if you learn to manage your own feelings about these events, and it's difficult to do, but if you learn to just accept that you have to be a stronger person for your children, then I think that may well help them to adjust to these
exactly,
things.
Exactly, because it shows them that you feel some sense of control and that you are going to be able to protect them as much as is humanly possible, given the unknowns that are out there.
I agree with you, but you know, you allude to something I think is important. Don't tell your children that nothing will happen to them. You know, don't deceive your children. Be honest. There are things that are beyond our control.
Exactly. We have no control over the weather, and we have really very little control over terrorism. But we do need to try to make our children feel protected and feel safe.
One of the things I think we can do, and this gears back into knowing a lot, making ourselves knowledgeable, is when we explain to our children that we're going to try to protect them and so forth and so on, we can give them specifics about now the flyovers that are happening, the military flyovers, and the kind of buildup we have, and things that they could accept on an age-appropriate basis that will tell them that there is some protection.
Right. Or just saying, we have bottled water in the basement. We have extra food stored. We have flashlight batteries, those kinds of things, which are very concrete and the children can actually see, can help make them feel a little more in control.
And while we don't have control over what a terrorist may do, there are so many people who have risen to the occasion and taken control of events that should never have happened. And I think children are very in tune with heroes and that we can point out the heroes. I know mothers who do this, who took their children in New York to the fire department. Her son had actually seen the plane hit the World Trade Center from his classroom and had a lot of trouble sleeping and was very disturbed. And they went to the fire department, and a lot of the firemen and firewomen had died. And just the sort of thing of being part of the community and knowing how important it is to be a community.
Right. I think the other thing that we really haven't touched on that I'd like to mention is the connection to some kind of spirituality or religious community, which I think is a very important part of this. In the wake of September 11th, almost every religious denomination had special services, and those were extremely meaningful to the community. I know that they were to me. And we look to our religious leaders in times of crisis like this, and it helps children feel connected, that they are not isolated. Even if you are not a particularly religious person, some kind of community connectedness is very important at times like this. And I think that, you know, the gatherings at our places of worship really made people feel very connected and safer in an important way. And I think that we need probably more of that in our daily lives.
What resources would you suggest for parents who are looking for more information on handling these issues?
There's one news program that I like for children. It's called Nick News by Linda Ellerbe. I don't think children should be starting off on the news of an adult program. I think they need to have news geared towards their age group.
What age group is this show designed to appeal to?
Grade school children, you know, middle childhood. And she's very eloquent, touches on deep issues, really is so responsive to the needs of children. So I would suggest that parents watch programs like that with their children. There are also media literacy efforts that are underway by places like Rutgers University. so that you can teach your children about how to use the media, which I think is an important part of the task of being an educated citizen.
Some newspapers I know have a kids page in the paper. I know the Washington Post does. I think a number of newspapers do that. So is that something parents could take advantage of?
Any of those resources that you can see.
And there are a number of books that have been written that could be helpful. Robert Coles, who's an eminent psychiatrist, has written a number of books on the political life of children and children having to deal with violence. And he would certainly be a good resource that would be available at your local public library.
Okay, that's spelled C-O-L-E-S?
Correct.
Robert Coles.
Yes.
Okay. And then we have a very lovely book, Children's Journeys Through the Information Age.
Thank you. I actually think it's a useful guide for people who are interested in knowing about how media impact children. It doesn't address the news directly, but it does talk about violence and a lot of the other issues that we see out there.
Well, you both have talked about a lot of things that have been very helpful to us and we know to all the parent listeners out there. And so, Rosalie Kogan and Dr. Sandra Calvert, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.